Our reading this evening is from Colossians chapter 3, verses 22 to 4, verse 1. Slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything, and do it not only when their eye is on you and to curry their favor, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. Anyone who does wrong will be repaid for their wrongs, and there is no favoritism. Masters, provide your slaves with what is right and fair, because you know that you also have a master in heaven.
Most of us, I guess, spend most of our week at work, paid or unpaid. Someone once wrote, I like work, it fascinates me, I can sit and look at it for hours. And maybe that's a good thing, because there's a lot of work to do, isn't there? Most of us spend most of our waking week at work, paid or unpaid, writing emails or hoovering. Perhaps not always hoovering, but in a surgery or changing nappies or driving a bus or driving grandchildren to work. And from Colossians 3:22 onwards, Paul talks about work and how to go to work, and that how you go to work matters. Most of us spend most of our waking week at work, and that matters to Jesus. And there is a lot of work to do, paid or unpaid, and it all matters to Jesus. There's a lot to do most days, whether that's making spreadsheets or making spaghetti or stuff at the office or stuff at home, helping clients, helping children. All of this matters to Jesus. Everything matters to Jesus. In fact, we'll see it matters so much to Jesus that he says, you work for me. Sure, it looks like you work for the NHS or that you work for your firm. Perhaps it looks like you work for your church or you work in the home. And you kind of do, but you kind of don't, because ultimately Jesus is saying, you work for me, paid or unpaid. So how you work matters. And Paul, in his letters, gives a fair amount of space to slaves and masters. And many people in this church were slaves. So hang on a minute, you might be saying, hang on a minute, before I get to my work in 2025, what about the elephant in the room? Slavery. I mean, that's bad, no? Well, why didn't Paul just abolish slavery? And the short answer to that is, there is no short answer to that. But let me try. And it's this. You can't always change the world, but you can live to please Jesus wherever he has placed you. In the Roman Empire at that time, perhaps about half the population were slaves in one form or another. And in Paul's day, to have imagined a world without slaves overnight would have been like us imagining the world not just without the internet, but without electricity. And of course, part of our problem with the word slave is that we tend to only think of slavery in the deep south of America or of Britain's awful history of kidnapping people from Africa and forcing them to work in cotton fields or in sugar plantations. And yes, some slaves in the first century were like that, but other slaves were also tutors and teachers, and some were more like civil servants, and some were very skilled. In other words, not that different from employees today. And the other thing is that the gospel lays the very seeds for the abolition of slavery. Because don't we celebrate that we are all one in Christ Jesus? And in the gospel, there are no little people. There are no slave and free. We're all made equally in God's image, equally redeemed in Jesus Christ. And so slavery, the abolition of slavery is at the very heart of the gospel. And in a different letter, Paul will write to slaves, if you can get your freedom, do it. But actually, what matters most, that's not what matters most. Revolution is not what matters most. What matters most is that you can please God wherever he's placed you even today, no matter how evil the days are. Or as I said before, you can't always change the world, but you can live to please Jesus wherever he has placed you today. And if a downtrodden slave could live to please Jesus 2,000 years ago, well then, so can you, so can I in 2025. And if slaves had to live for him in their day, then you and I need to learn how to live for him in our day. Because you see, whether you're a slave or a managing director, living for Jesus always takes guts. Whether you're parenting children or you're retired at home, still living for Jesus takes guts. And Paul lays out principles in the gospel that have to be worked out in every age, in every culture, for everyone. No, you can't always change the world, but you can live to please Jesus wherever he's placed you. And that is true in all you do, paid or unpaid, seen or unseen, commuting for hours or staying at home, whatever you do. So here's the question. On Monday morning, when the alarm goes off, how do you get up? And I think the first thing that Paul wants us to recognize is that you work under authority. And that's from verse 22. You work under authority. Slaves, he says, obey your earthly masters in everything. Interesting, I think, to think, who does Paul write to? Paul is addressing slaves. And that's a surprise, because no one in the ancient world wrote to slaves. Sure, they wrote to masters, but slaves were treated like animals. They were tools to be used. They were just machines on legs. You know, so if you're a farmer, you probably don't discuss all your plans with your sheep. Or at home, when you're doing the hoovering, you don't actually discuss with your hoover which room to do first, do you? If you do, you may have issues. But 2,000 years ago, you didn't reason with slaves. But you see, Paul writes to slaves and he treats them as human beings and he gives them dignity. Because in the gospel, there are no little people. There are no hidden people. And that was revolutionary. And so Paul writes to slaves and he says, okay, so here's what you have to do and here's what not to do. And he starts, verse 22, slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything. In other words, you have a boss and you have a choice. When they say something, do you do it or don't do it? And Paul says, do it. You work under their authority. Because actually, that's how God's world works. There is always someone over you and someone over them and someone over them. And you have to obey them or else there's anarchy, because God is a God of order. Elsewhere, Paul can write to obey the government that he has put over you. And you think about it, when Paul wrote that, who was the government that was put over the people? It wasn't Keir Starmer, it was Nero. There's a contrast. But Nero loved to throw Christians to the lions. He loved to burn Christians as human torches. But God is a God of order. And so Paul can write, you are under authority. Actually, God is a God of order, and even Jesus is under authority. He is not inferior to his Father, but he submits to his Father because order is woven into the fabric of the universe. So you've got a choice. You work under your authority, so obey your boss, obey the government, not because they're good people, not because they're always right, but because God is a God of authority, God of order, and you work under authority. Now, we'll see in a moment that to obey in everything does not mean obey when the boss tells you to lie to the tax man, or tells you to cheat a customer, or to be shoddy in your bricklaying. But apart from that, in everything else, verse 22, obey your earthly masters in everything. And key here is that phrase, earthly masters. They're earthly masters. That is, we are under their authority. Everybody is under authority, but earthly masters, and some of them are a pain in the neck, and Peter can write that some of them are harsh, but they are earthly masters. They are temporary. Their time is limited. They have limited authority over you on earth. And your boss won't be your boss forever. But Jesus is. And that leads to the second point, that you work for the Lord. You work under authority, but you work for the Lord. And that is threaded through all of these verses. So at the end of verse 22, it says, we work out of reverence for the Lord. Verse 23, work with all your heart as working for the Lord. Verse 24, it is the Lord Christ you are serving. I mean, could Paul be any more clear? You work for the Lord. Work for the Lord. It is the Lord Christ you're serving. You work for the Lord, not the dragon who sits in the corner office. And so, whether you trudge to work on a Monday morning or skip happily to work on a Monday morning, sure, it looks like you work for your boss, but that's just what it looks like on the surface. And underneath, Jesus says, you work for me. And that changes everything. The reformers 500 years ago discovered, or perhaps better, they rediscovered this. So William Tyndale wrote this. He said, if you look externally, on the outside, there's a difference between washing dishes and preaching the word. But as touching to please God, not at all. Washing dishes and preaching, they look very different on the outside, but underneath, not so much. Underneath, both are things you do for God, and one is not better than the other, and one is not more godly than the other. You see, if I should be washing dishes or changing a nappy, then what am I doing preaching? If God calls me to do one and I'm doing the other, if God calls me to do one today or for a season and I'm doing the other, then who am I doing that for? I must be just doing it for me, not for Jesus. I'm doing it for my fame, not for Jesus. And that's the kind of work that gets burned up. You work for Jesus. And anything you do, you can do for him. So do it for him. Whatever you do, do it for him. In the 1800s, Spurgeon had a maid, and she worked in his home, and she became a Christian. And he asked her, what difference has it made to you now knowing Jesus? And she answered, well, sir, I now also sweep up the dust under your carpets. I suddenly realize there's a bit of a theme coming out here of hoovering. But Jesus says you work for me. And so do all you do, paid or unpaid, seen or unseen, do all you do for him. Perhaps that thing that no one else sees or no one else notices. Perhaps it's that story for that child at bedtime. Or that care you took in that phone call for that client. Or that time you swallowed your anger and gave a kinder response. That thing you did because you did it for him is precious in his eyes, and it's made beautiful because all your work is an act of worship. All of work is an act of worship. There's no such thing as secular work. All of work is sacred. And you see, there's a kind of alchemy that in work he turns what you do into gold in his eyes, and everything is made beautiful if it's done for the Lord. Your work is an act of worship. It is a way of pleasing God, of honoring God. And when we work like that, we give him worship. Because work is one of God's great good gifts for us. It's a way of working with him, of enjoying him. Back in Paul's day, the Greek and the Roman gods, they were up there on Mount Olympus, and they didn't like to work, they liked to party. So they gave work as a curse to human beings so that they could chill out. But not so, says the Bible. Work is a gift from God, and actually God himself works. He works in creation, he works for 6 days and then he rests. He gives to Adam and Eve work before the fall, before sin enters the world. And when God made us in his image, he made us with an immense capacity for work, paid or unpaid, at home or in your company, 6 days out of seven. And work is a gift from God, a way to image God, a way to be like God, to enjoy God. Jesus says in John 5, he says, my father is working and I too am working. Present tense. God is a worker and it's a gift for us to worship him. And actually in the new creation throughout all eternity, we will still serve our Lord and it'll be work without frustration or toil or tears. Work, paid or unpaid, is a gift from God. It is work today as a way to worship God, to glorify him and enjoy him forever. Yes, work is a very good thing and it can become a beautiful thing in his eyes. But of course, we know that work is messed up. All work is messed up by the fall, by sin. And so you may go into next week with a very heavy heart. And your work may feel too big, or too futile, or frustrating, or boring, or unnoticed, or unthanked, or unpaid. Your work, your career may not be what you'd always hoped it would be. And you can't always change the world, but you can live to please Jesus wherever he's placed you. So do what you do for the Lord. Work as for the Lord, paid or unpaid, because he sees and nothing is wasted and nothing is in vain. And as you work for Jesus, paid or unpaid, there's a kind of alchemy and he turns what you do into gold in his eyes. So you work under authority. There are earthly masters. That's what it looks like on the surface, but underneath you work for Jesus. And every moment is an act of worship. So how then shall we work? Well, Paul says, work from the heart. Work from the heart. Look at verse 22. He says, obey your earthly masters in everything and do it not only when their eye is on you to curry favor, or to be a people pleaser. And I think every workplace has got someone like that, haven't they? By the way, if you think your workplace hasn't got someone like that, maybe it's you. But every workplace has got someone like that who does the absolute minimum. But when the boss's eye is on them, it's uncanny. They're transformed before your eyes and suddenly they're eager to please and nothing is too small and nothing's too much trouble. There's so much energy. And then when the boss's eye turns around, they're doom scrolling on their phone again and backbiting about the boss. Let that not be you. Why? Because Jesus says you work for me. And you wouldn't do that for Jesus, would you? And so verse 23, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord. Or at the end of verse 22, work with sincerity of heart. And that word sincerity was a word that was used of a cloth that had been unfolded in the marketplace. You go into the marketplace to buy a sheet or a towel or something like that, and it's unfolded. You can see that there are no creases, there are no dark spots, there's no stains or dirt hidden in the corners. It's plain. Both sides are clean. You can see exactly what it is. What you see is what you get. And a sincere heart implies that same integrity, that you're the one person, no matter who's watching you. Or even if nobody's watching you. It's not just when the boss's eye is on you that you're a people pleaser and a hypocrite, but actually you have a sincere heart. You're uncomplicated, one-sided, one-faced, without folds. That's how you work for Jesus, with a sincere heart. Recently, I was talking with someone who said that when she first started work, she was the junior on the team, and the team had a major event coming up for some clients, some very big clients, and someone had forgotten to book the venue, and they'd had to cancel. And so the boss came to my friend and says, I want you to phone every high-profile client and blame it on the venue. Say that they messed up. Say that they double-booked. And she said, I can't do that. And he was furious, and he tore a strip off her in front of all her colleagues, and he held it against her for a very, very long time and sidelined her. But about a year later, as she was leaving that team, she was getting an exit interview. The boss said, you know, we didn't see eye to eye on a number of things. But you were the only employee I knew I never had to check their expense claims. Yes, obey your earthly masters, but first you work for the Lord. So work for him from your heart with integrity. Be the same no matter who's looking, whether Jesus is looking or your boss is looking or your peers are looking. Be the same. And that way you never have to fear imposter syndrome because you're already enough in Jesus' eyes. And Jesus knows you inside out and he still wants you. Jesus died for you on the cross when he knew the worst about you, when he knew all the hidden folds and stains and the dirty cloths that you wrapped around yourself. Jesus knew you then inside out, and he died for you when you were a scrumpled, filthy mess and made you his. So on Monday morning, don't pretend. You work first for Jesus, so work with sincerity, with integrity, work with all your heart, because there's only one person whose opinion ultimately matters, and that opinion is already in. He's already delighted in you. There's only one person to please, and he's already pleased with you. So don't pretend in front of Jesus, which is just stupid, and don't pretend in front of other people, because you don't have to. And that way you've got nothing to hide, nothing to fear. Never need to be afraid that you'll be discovered. No imposter syndrome. So verse 22, verse 23, do all you do with all your heart as for Jesus. And that is a beautiful witness. Paul in Titus 2 writes this. He says, teach slaves to be subject to their masters in everything, to try to please them, so that in every way they will make the teaching about God our Savior attractive. You work from the heart, and that makes the gospel of Jesus Christ attractive. One of the other translations says that it adorns the gospel. It adorns it a bit like beautiful jewelry or the aroma of freshly baked bread. It wins people's hearts. Work like that makes Jesus attractive. Being like him is attractive. By contrast, when I worked as an accountant, I stank. I wanted to talk about Jesus, but I did not work for my firm with all my heart. I thought my 9-to-5 was a waste of my life. I thought all these works were going to get burned up. I thought accountancy didn't matter in his eyes. I thought the only thing that mattered was spiritual stuff, church stuff. I didn't understand that I was working for Jesus. I didn't understand everything I've just been preaching, and I did not make Jesus beautiful to my colleagues by my work. You see, you are called to work for your boss, and you're called to work for Jesus. And you are a witness for Jesus, either a bad one like me, or someone who adorns the gospel, who makes it attractive and makes Jesus desirable. C.S. Lewis once said, imagine if the best artists or plumbers or writers or doctors or teachers were Christians. Imagine when you went through the Yellow Pages, if you have such a thing, when you Googled a tradesman, the best one you could find was a Christian. Wouldn't that make the gospel of Jesus Christ attractive? Wouldn't it say something to the world about a God who cares about all of creation and who cares about you and the fruit of your labors? So paid or unpaid, work from the heart because you work for Jesus, and that is an act of worship. And that makes yet another spreadsheet into gold dust in his eyes. Or taking out the rubbish, or caring for older parents, or handling one more customer complaint, they can become an act of worship. And let me just say that this is not about workaholism, and this is not about perfectionism. Luther once said that in so much of life, we're like a drunk man getting on a horse. We fall off one side, and then to compensate, we get up and fall off the other side. And just because we shouldn't be lazy at work doesn't mean we fall off the horse the other side and become workaholics or perfectionists. Because you see, work is an act of worship, but we don't worship work. Our work doesn't give us worth. Jesus gives us worth. Our work doesn't give us identity. Jesus gives us identity. So yes, you can work hard. You can work from your heart, but you can also lay it down and rest. Even in creation, there's a rhythm of work and rest. And work is an act of worship. It is not to worship work itself. to work for the Lord from all your heart. And the last thing that Paul says here to slaves is work for his reward. And you see that in verse 24. He says, you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. And that would have been a very, very precious verse to any slave. Because you were a slave, you were owned, you didn't own anything. If you were a slave, you could be bought and sold, but you couldn't even buy and sell property. You were property. You would never inherit the farm. But Paul says your true master, Jesus, will reward you. He sees, he knows, and he has an inheritance for you in Jesus. And I think that is so precious for us today, because so many of us, you may be working with young children or grandchildren, you may be retired or in the home, and there's no salary. And that's hard because our world only values what it can put a price tag on. But you work for Jesus and he will reward you. Or you may be working in a job where honestly you're underpaid and there are others doing the same job who are paid more than you, but you work for Jesus and he will reward you. Or you may be working in a job and you've worked hard and it's not been recognized, or you've been overlooked or passed over, but you work for Jesus and he will reward you. Even if the career is not the career you ever thought it would be and you didn't get what you thought you'd get in life, he sees. You work for him. Work for his well done, good and faithful servant, because your inheritance is in Jesus. And ultimately, that is worth more than any salary. Now, there's nothing wrong with asking for a pay rise. People should be treated fairly and justly. You'll see that in chapter 4, verse 1. Masters should treat people fairly. If you can resolve it, do. If you need to change job, you can change job. These verses are not about being doormats, but the principle is this. It is that whether you're paid peanuts or you're paid millions, what will matter in 1,000 years? The inheritance that Jesus has for you. So work for him. And verse 24 is an encouragement to know that God sees, God knows, and he will reward you. And if verse 24 is an encouragement, verse 25 is a warning. Anyone who does wrong will be repaid for their wrongs, and there is no favoritism. In other words, if the boss messes me around, can I mess them around? No. Their sin doesn't give you the right to be sinful. If my boss treats me badly, can I treat them badly? Can I be lazy? Can I be shoddy? No. Their sin doesn't give you the right to be sinful. Or if my boss asks me to do something wrong, not quite illegal, but kind of colouring outside the lines, you know, just fudging the truth or just being economical, blaming someone else for your mistakes, can I do that? No. Their sin doesn't give you an excuse to be sinful. And all through history, many awful things have been done by decent people, just saying, well, I was just following orders. Your boss's sin doesn't give you the right to be sinful. So yes, top and tail this passage, obey your earthly masters in everything, but remember Jesus says you work for me first, and you can't obey your earthly masters if they're telling you to disobey your heavenly master. And that may be very costly. It has been very costly down through the centuries. You might get a beating as a slave. You might lose your job today, but you work for Jesus and for an eternity with Jesus, and he will reward you, and you won't miss out if you work for his well done. So that is how to go to work next week. You work for Jesus, paid or unpaid. You work for Jesus, and he will reward you. So do all you do as an act of worship, because you work for him. And no, you can't always change the world, but you can live to please Jesus wherever he's placed you. And anything you do in his name, for his sake, he turns into gold dust. And just one quick thought as I finish. We've been talking about slaves. Paul's been talking about slaves here, but But nowhere in the Bible does God treat you as a slave. Even in books like Exodus, God rescues slaves from Egypt, but he makes them into children. God doesn't have slaves. He doesn't even have employees. He only has children. You think about the prodigal son. He thinks about returning to his father, and he thinks, the best I can hope for is to be a slave or a hired servant. He can't imagine that his father wants to sweep him off his feet and embrace him again as his son. And the father adopts you into his family in Jesus, and you are a daughter, a son in the son. And that changes everything, because you get to work with him as children of the king. Jesus said, my father is working and I too am working, because Jesus works with his father. And sons in the ancient world, well, they worked, but they worked with their father. They worked on the same farm. They were invested in the same decisions. They were all about the same work. And that's us. This gift of work that God has given us is for us to join with him in his world. We're children of the king, and we get to work with him in his world. And God is working today. God is an artist. And every morning as the sun rises, he paints 1,000 different canvases in 1,000 different valleys. And you work with him when you create beauty in your small corner of his world. And God today is mending bodies and restoring wholeness. And you work with him when you nurture a child or walk into the surgery. And God today is a speaking God. He's a teaching God. And you work with him when you help someone learn. He makes wheat grow and we bake bread. He hides treasures in the cosmos and scientists dig them up and discover them. He makes homes for all creatures and we make homes homely. Because God is invested in his material world. And God is overflowing with joy in the world that he has made. And in your joyful work, that delights his heart, because your work is an act of worship. And the work that you do is a gift from him to join him in his world. And that transforms everything. You see, when we work, we get to enjoy him. We don't work to earn from him. We work to enjoy him. We don't work to earn from him to earn our place in heaven. We work with light hearts because we already have everything. We are already children of the king. We already have everything in Jesus, all his riches. We will one day inherit all things with him. So we don't work to earn from him. We work to enjoy him. We get to work with him next week. So whatever you do, paid or unpaid, seen or unseen, do all you do as an act of worship, working with him and looking for his well done, good and faithful servant. Let's pray together. Father, how we thank you that in your eyes there are no little people. And you have given every one of us every day every opportunity to worship you in hidden ways and on ordinary days. And you invite us to work alongside you in your world. Please, we pray, transform us that we would see the beauty that you see in every simple act. And may our hearts and lives and the work of our hands be pleasing in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer.